This podcast is part of the Bomb Pod Media Network.
This is an American Crimecast production. Visit us at our new home at accproductions.org. And remember, everyone is innocent until proven guilty in the court of law.
Just three albums into his critically acclaimed career, the music world mourned Kurt Cobain's seemingly unexpected and violent death. Many questioned why a man at the peak of his career, who had recently celebrated the birth of a daughter, would be driven to suicide. Meanwhile, Cobain's father-in-law, Hank Harrison, accused his own daughter, Courtney Love, of being responsible for Kurt's death. At the time of Cobain's death, he was suffering from drug addiction and clinical depression, all of which had plagued Cobain even before he achieved fame. Struggling with the pressures of fame and public scrutiny, heightened by his high-profile relationship with Courtney Love, evidence suggests that Cobain was disillusioned with his success and intent on a path of self-destruction. Perhaps it is best expressed by Nirvana drummer David Grohl, who stated he knew Cobain would die at an early age, saying, "Sometimes you just can't save someone from themselves."
All kinds of red flags started popping up. She starts telling us these things that just didn't add up. And this woman's husband had just been found dead, and there didn't seem to be any sadness whatsoever. And there was more to this than what I was being told. If Kurt Cobain commits suicide, Courtney inherits it all.
Yeah, the very famous alleged suicide note, which the body seems clearly to be a goodbye letter to the fan base of his current style of music. The lower four lines could sound somewhat like saying goodbye to the planet. The highest experts that we could get to review it, was my opinion, and many others believe the lower four lines are a completely different handwriting. What we learned is that Kurt did not receive anything remotely close to a fair death investigation, and of course he deserves one. There's a lot of things to be suspicious about.
This was more likely a homicide than a suicide.
The body of Nirvana leader Kurt Cobain was found in a house in Seattle on Friday morning, dead of an apparently self-inflicted shotgun blast to the head.
I just think that it's a staged suicide is what I think. That's the bottom line. The needle was taken off the syringe, the tourniquet was taken off the arm, everything was placed back in the cigar box neatly, and then he proceeds to take a shotgun and kill himself. It's highly unlikely.
I don't think Kurt wanted to be a huge fucking rock star. And I don't think he could handle how complicated it had all become. Kurt went to Rome. I turn on the TV and Kurt was being wheeled away in an ambulance in Rome. When he came home, I remember talking to him on the phone and saying, "Hey man, I don't want you to die." And he was very apologetic. No, I'm sorry. It's a big mistake. Took these pills. I was drinking these champagne and was in Rome. It was just made a mistake. When I found out that he had killed himself, I was kind of numb. I knew that he was gone, but I didn't know how to feel.
Kurt Cobain, a sweet and gifted man, dead at the age of 27.
Hey everybody, before we pick up where we left off with part 1, Part two is a look into the investigation and some facts and details. I would like to give another special thanks to Casey and Sam from True Crime Storytime for participating in this episode. Those ladies were absolutely a pleasure to work with. Super nice, super cool. We all had a great time. I would like to thank Boone as well for coming over and participating in it. And I got to give a huge shout out to Chelsea from Kinship Productions. Thank you very much for piecing all of this together for the best audio I have had on any episode. Thank you so much. A thousand thank yous. And stay tuned after the conversation part of the show for a very special ending. Thank you again, and enjoy. We're going to skip, you know, a few years, because this isn't about record deals. This isn't about when he signed with Sub Pop. This isn't about that shit.
You got a sense of his background.
This is about his life. We got a sense of his background. We're going to move on to the investigation of it, of his death and the days surrounding it. But they were in Europe when Nirvana actually got really big, when they hit the top 40. You know, Kurt and the rest of the band, they were getting phone calls, you know, saying, hey, you know, your guys' stuff is on the radio all over the place over here. And they really didn't know what to think of it. You know what I mean? So they come back to America, and almost overnight, these guys are some of the biggest rock stars in the fucking world. You know, Kurt starts having some extra money, and they start, you know, he gets lucky enough. He does have some good people around him. He has, you know, around Geffen Records, they surround him with some very good people who are managing his money very well. And he has a very good, you know, Geffen Records did actually take very good care of him.
What'd you lawyers, say? Accountants.
Oh, yeah. Lawyers, accountants, all that good stuff. You know, him and Courtney end up getting married. They have a child. Actually, she was pregnant at the time. They got married in Hawaii in their pajamas in perfect grunge form. But yeah, I mean, with all this just comes really just rock superstardom. And I hate fast-forwarding that fast, but, you know, there's a lot of details and stuff in the death that we still need to cover. And I would love to make this a 5-hour long episode, but that's not going to fucking happen.
Yeah, we can't do that.
So let's fast forward to Kurt Cobain's intervention, which is before he goes to the rehab facility, which it pisses me off when people say that he jumped the wall and escaped, because that is not the fucking truth. That is not how that happened. It was a fucking voluntary treatment facility. He literally walked out the front fucking door. And in a lot of documentary interviews with other musicians and fucking Rolling Stone and blah, 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 they're like, oh, he fucking jumped the wall. He didn't jump the fucking wall.
There was no guard at the fucking door.
There was no guard at the door.
There was nothing to keep him in
there. Was nothing to keep him in there, but there was an intervention, basically, and all these people surrounding him are saying, hey, you need to do this Lollapalooza tour, because pretty much where we are at in the timeline is at this particular point in time. Anybody feel free to add anything at any point in time. Kurt Cobain is filthy rich, okay? He's making good money, and obviously he's not, you know, a fucking billionaire or anything, but he's set for life. He's surrounded himself with good people, and literally he can live off the fucking royalties and never mind for the rest of his goddamn life, and so could his great-grandkids. And he knows this. He's not a stupid guy. But he's tired of being that guy. He's tired of being, he has literally found out that he is the voice for an entire generation. But he doesn't want to be this guy. He literally just wanted to be an artist. You know, so at this point in time, I can't say the band is feuding. They're not fighting. They're all still getting along very well. But at the same time, Kurt wants to quit the band. He does not want to be a rock star anymore. He wants to be quiet. He doesn't want to be a front man. He would have been perfectly content being a fucking drummer and nobody even knowing who the fuck he was. He just wanted to create some form of art. And music was the perfect form, and it was his outlet, and it was what got him to where he was. So
he was tired.
He was tired.
he just didn't want to do it anymore. What he wanted to do was he wanted to be a studio musician. And yeah, it doesn't pay as well. You know, it doesn't, you know, have all the perks of being a rock superstar. But he would have been still creating music. He still would have been in the studio. He still would have been doing what he loved. There were certain people in his life that did not want this to happen. Now, when he has this intervention, granted, he's already had Frances Bean, his daughter, at this point in time, and he's very, very happy. But he had a lot of fucking problems. He had a lot of physical pain, emotional pain. He had a lot of shit. So when he has this intervention, the people that give him this intervention are Courtney Love, his wife, I believe, what's his name, Michael DeWitt, you know, a few other people that basically Courtney had surrounded herself with. And yeah, Pat Smear was there, which if any of you know Pat Smear, he was a big dude in Foo Fighters, hell of a guitar player. He also played with Kurt back when they were Nirvana. He played a lot of live shows and stuff like that, did studio work for him. Him and Kurt were really good friends, but he actually got pissed. And this is when he goes to this rehab facility. I think part of him actually going to this rehab facility wasn't so much to get help, but I think it was more of, and this is just personal opinion, I think it was just more of him trying to shut everybody up. Like, fine, I will go. Just shut up and leave me the fuck alone. And touching base on that Rome incident a little bit, what was it, about a month before, they were in Rome on tour. Courtney says that she found him. He was unconscious. She changes her story a couple times. First, it was on the bed. Then he was on the floor. He has a little bit of blood coming out of his nostril. And supposedly, he had taken 50 or so Rohypnol pills and wrote a suicide note and tried to kill himself. And he was in a coma for quite a while. I mean, this was a big deal when this happened. But one thing on a side fact that you have to remember is two things. One, the only person who witnessed any of this and the only person who spoke out about it, the details wise about anything, is also the same person that changed her story, and that is Courtney Love. And another side fact is Rohypnol is also known as a date rape drug. It is odorless, it is tasteless, and it easily dissolves in any kind of liquid. So it is not out of the realm of possibilities to think that you could put this into somebody's drink, obviously being the date rape drug, or being a form of the date rape drug, to where somebody could take it and them not know it. You know, like I said, he's rushed to the hospital, he's in a coma for a while, and it's reported as a suicide attempt. Now, the narrative of the suicide attempt does come directly from Courtney Love, unfortunately. There are other outlets in Rome and in the U.S. that did have different reports on, you know, the chain of events that happened. And one of them would be a call to David Geffen that Courtney Love had supposedly made, saying, hey, you know, he attempted suicide, you know, blah, blah, blah. This is what's going on. But in all honesty, Courtney Love says, no, that wasn't me. That was a prank phone call. But I'm going to ask you guys right now, how easy do you think it is to get a major fucking record executive like David Geffen on the phone as quick as that person did, if that is true? You know what I'm saying? Because at this point in time, David Geffen was one of the fucking kings of recording. Of the entire music industry. You can't just fucking call the office and say, hey, let me talk to David Geffen, and somebody's going to put him on the phone. It doesn't work that way. So with that being said, he does recover from a coma. They come home. And like you had stated, going into rehab, I think a lot of that was Frances. You know, she had threatened him with, you know, his daughter. And like you had also said, they had already had a lot of fucking heat on themselves for, you know, custody. You know, Courtney Love had, I don't want to say accidentally, but she had admitted to using heroin while she was pregnant. You know, a lot of the press, a lot of the people around there, you know, obviously Child Protective Services are like, you guys are fucking unfit parents, you know? So they're sitting here trying to prove that they are fit parents at the same time, trying to keep going with what they're doing. They're trying to still be regular drug users because they are addicts, you know? But another good point that you had brought up is all these people that are trying to convince him to go to rehab are all fucking heroin addicts just like him. That would fucking piss you off because it's like, what kind of hypocritical shit is that, you know? But you also have to think, Nirvana breaking up would have been detrimental to anybody who stood any kind of ground to make money off of Nirvana. Now, Kurt had recently turned down a Lollapalooza tour for the summer of 94, which would have guaranteed them $9.5 million. He said he didn't want to do it. He was done. Nirvana was breaking up, and he also had said that he wanted to divorce Courtney Love. Not only are the people involved in this intervention also regular fucking drug users, but they are also the only people that have shit to gain from Nirvana, from Kurt Cobain, not go out and go on tour. So if you put it into perspective, $9.5 million, you have Courtney Love, you know, you have, what was it, Michael DeWitt. I can't remember, what was the other name of the nanny?
Oh, the man nanny?
Mm-hmm.
The man nanny?
His nickname was Callie. He was Michael DeWitt. They call him Callie because he was from Calabasas, California. What Callie's deal was he was a roadie for Hole. By the time he was 16, he had dropped out of school and was a roadie for Hole. Yeah, he was fucking Courtney Love, you know, at some point in time, which a lot of people were. Yeah, I, not to be an asshole about it, sorry, but, you know, let's get real here, okay? You know, it's not even the rock style life, it's the Courtney Love life, all right?
Well, you can go there.
Let's get fucking real.
I was trying to be more biased. I mean, I'm just saying.
No, it's fact, bro. All right. But here's the deal with Michael DeWitt, also known as Callie, which we'll call him Callie from now on. The deal with Callie was he was a live-in nanny, and he was supplied heroin on a regular basis. That was part of his fucking payment. Now, if Courtney Love loses Kurt Cobain turning down all this fucking money, then Callie DeWitt loses all this free fucking heroin, all this badass money for basically doing nothing, for just traveling around and fucking living with them, and getting free fucking heroin all the time. I mean, it's hard to explain addiction to somebody who's never been in that spectrum or in that atmosphere. But when you're in the grips of addiction, you don't fucking care. All you care about is your next fix. You don't fucking care how you get it. You don't care who you get it from. So to him, Courtney Love was a meal ticket. To Courtney Love, Kurt Cobain was a meal ticket because she truly wasn't doing that much shit. Yeah, she had made some records. She was actually getting ready to release one. Okay, go ahead and ask your question.
Do you think that she knew that he was getting ready to ask for a divorce?
Okay. Now, with that question being answered honestly, here's some facts about Courtney Love, okay? She inherited a shitload of money from her grandma, went to England, and was a professional fucking groupie. Before that, she was stripping. Probably, I'm not saying that I believe it, but there are rumors that she was also turning tricks at the time. But she was a professional fucking groupie. Literally, she was fucking anybody in the band that could get her somewhere. That is how she got her start into the music industry. That's how she got her fucking connections. She was a professional groupie. Before Kurt, she was latched on to like three or four other dudes, one of which being fucking Billy Corgan. You know, three or four other major ones. But when she saw Kurt Cobain play live, she was like, that's him. But here's the deal. Like, the prenup, the only person that says she suggested it is her. In reality, it was his manager that suggested the prenup. And I hate saying that. I mean, I hate it, but I don't hate it. I fucking love it. Because Courtney Love is a fucking sociopath. She's like a total narcissist, okay? Like, Yeah. She is a total fucking sociopath. Like, when Tom Grant comes into play, which is going to play a huge factor when we get into the investigation side of it, let me tell you something about a grieving widow of a guy who kills himself, who is a major rock star. He kills himself in fucking, or supposedly kills himself in April. Allegedly, yeah. In April. By June, she is already with Trent Reznor and hiring Tom Grant to follow Trent Reznor around to see if Trent Reznor is cheating on her. Now, first of all, she's this huge grieving widow crying on TV, reading this fucking suicide note. And I put the air quotations up there since nobody can see it. Reading this fucking suicide note to all these grieving fans on fucking TV. All these news outlets are there crying, pouring her fucking heart out. 2 fucking months later, what does she do? She moves on to the next big fucking guy. All right, so with all the info on Courtney Love being said, we're going to backtrack back to when Kurt Cobain leaves the rehab facility. He gets Michael DeWitt, I believe, or was it the other guy? I can't remember exactly. Was it DeWitt? Him and DeWitt, he has DeWitt buy him a shotgun. This shotgun is a light load shotgun. According to fucking Michael DeWitt,
good friend.
According to Callie DeWitt, it's his good fucking friend. Callie DeWitt actually in later interviews has gone on to state, if I knew Courtney Love or anybody else was involved in murdering my friend, I'd fucking murder them. Bullshit, wow. Dude, you're a fucking junkie. All right. They go and since Kurt Cobain can't technically buy a gun at this point in time, because of a March 18th incident,
he is there with him.
He's there with him, yeah. But on March 18th, what happens is there's a domestic dispute. One of many in the Cobain home. Cops show up. Kurt Cobain is out back, standing out back with his hands in his pockets, rolling his eyes, embarrassed as fuck. Probably because his wife is making this huge deal about all this shit that didn't fucking happen. Cops show up. They talk to Courtney Love. She's fucking yelling at the cops. The cops take each of them into separate police cars and talk to them. Kurt Cobain's sitting here saying, listen, this isn't true. Like, I didn't lock myself in any room. Yes, I do have guns. And he wasn't a hunter of any type, but he was an avid shooter. He did like to shoot guns. And Jesus, I know
he's from a logging town.
He's from a logging town. I mean, I can understand that. I'm from the country. Like, literally, I go out to my dad's house all the time and shoot fucking guns because it's fun, you know, and, you know, we don't shoot at anything. It's an escape. But he's in the car and he's telling the cop, he's like, listen, like, this is not what happened. Like, I'm not suicidal. She's basically bullshitting you guys. She's making this big scene out of absolutely nothing. And Courtney Love gets in the car and she actually admits within that time frame that she had lied about the fact that he had locked himself in that room and that he was suicidal. So moving back forward, he can't buy a gun, so he has Kelly DeWitt go buy him a gun. It's a light load 20 gauge shotgun. It's a Remington Model 11.
Why did he buy it, though?
Well, you know, we're not really sure on the reason he bought the gun. It's speculated by some people for the suicide. It's also speculated by the other half of people that he was scared for his life. Because a light load shotgun, granted it being a 20 gauge, and the model that it was, is a home protection shotgun. It's something that you can shoot an intruder with, but it's not going to penetrate through a wall and kill the person in the next room. It's not a destructive gun. It's literally like a home protective shotgun. But the real question is what I'm not particularly sure about is what shells he actually bought with his shotgun, because that does play into the crime scene. But this specific shotgun, being light load, it is considered more for home protection. So he gets the shotgun, and he's pretty much off the map after this. This is where Courtney Love, on Easter Sunday, 1994, calls up Tom Grant. Courtney Love states, and she literally is flipping through the yellow pages, and she's looking for a private investigator because Kurt Cobain is missing at this point in time. She has no idea. You know, he had escaped from rehab. She doesn't know where he is. And I can't really use...
And she's in, what is it called? Some stupid hotel.
Well, she's in a Beverly Hills hotel.
Well, it's supposed to be rehab, but it's not.
Yeah, he's missing. She's flipping through the yellow pages. She wants him found. So what she does is she calls up Tom Grant. Tom Grant has no idea who Courtney Love is. He has no idea who Kurt Cobain is. He basically, you know, she says, hey, this is Courtney Love. I'm looking for my husband. I need to know, and I also need to know who has his stolen credit card. His credit card is stolen, and somebody is charging to his credit card. So Tom Grant has no idea who this is, but there's a younger police officer or a younger person there with him who knows who they are. And they're like, holy fucking shit, man. Like, this is Kurt Cobain and Courtney Love. So Tom Grant's like, all right, cool. Now, Tom Grant is not only a private investigator, but he was also an L.A. County cop for a long time. He was a fucking detective for 20 years.
I think.
No, he was a veteran. He definitely was a veteran. And he dealt with a lot of prostitutes. He dealt with a lot of drug addicts. He dealt with a lot of criminals. So he's not a dummy. So he answers the call. He goes to the hotel room. As soon as he gets there, he notices that pretty much everybody in this hotel room is on heroin. Everybody is in.
This is supposed to be an escape.
And this is supposed to be like a drug escape, kind of. First thing he asks, you know, hey, you know, you called me about the stolen credit card. She says, oh, that credit card wasn't stolen. I canceled it. First fucking thing out of her mouth is a lie. Okay? So Tom Grant, immediately being a L.A. County cop for so long, says, okay, this is kind of suspicious, but I'm going to keep going forward with it. And he sits in there, and he talks to Courtney Love, and she keeps changing her story. She keeps telling him that, you know, my husband is missing, somebody's using the credit card, even though I canceled it. Says that, oh, he's wanting a divorce and I need you to follow him around. She basically keeps changing her story over and over as, just you know, this first meeting is going on. And finally she gets to the point. She's like, just track him down and fucking find him. But she doesn't want anybody to know that Tom Grant is looking for him. She is very specific in saying, if you leak any of this to the press, I will fucking sue you for everything you have.
Actual tape.
Because Tom Grant, being a private investigator, recorded almost 40 hours worth of conversations with Courtney Love. Now, with all that being said, Tom Grant agrees to the job. Because he does have a certain obligation. Because she's saying he's suicidal. Then she's saying he wants a divorce. If somebody is in that realm of possibly taking their own life, he has an obligation to find that person and try to stop that from happening. So he decides to take the job. But he's kind of weary about it. And this is where, you know, the next few days, he's basically trying to track him down. You know, he's talking to Callie DeWitt. He's talking to, you know, some of the other band members of Hole, like Erica Erlandson. It's really weird how Courtney Love worked, because a lot of the guys that she surrounded herself with were basically people that she could manipulate. She, you know, in one interview, she straight up said, you know, speaking of Eric Erlandson, that, you know, if I had to blow my nose, this guy would run and go get a Kleenex for me. And that was pretty much how it was. Eric Erlandson was actually known to beat up women for Courtney Love. That's how she did that. She manipulated him in that way. And it was not also that. Same thing with Callie DeWitt. She was having sex with him. This kid was a 16, 17, 18-year-old roadie, and she manipulated him in that way to basically do kind of whatever she wanted, along with the drug scenario. You know, she provided him drugs because she had the money to provide him with drugs, which was Kurt's money. And speaking of Kurt's money, one of the very first things she says in an interview after she gets married, he said, you know, she's asked, you know, what's Kurt going to get you for a wedding present? She says, I'm going to get Kurt's ATM card. Flat out. You know, that kind of gives you an idea of the kind of person that she was, I suppose. His credit card was used 2 times the morning that he was found dead. Yeah, somebody did attempt to use it afterward as well. But by the time his body was found, obviously, everything was pretty much seized at that point in time until...
But wasn't the whole thing... Didn't she say she canceled it?
Yeah, she said she canceled it.
She canceled all credit cards.
But, yet, somebody was still using it. And to this day, we don't know who that person was. We really don't. And like you had said, Sam, he had surrounded himself by so many people that it's really hard telling. And I don't want to say he was a trustworthy guy, but he kind of was. But at the same time, he didn't fucking care. You know, he was like, I got what I need to get by every day. I really don't fucking care.
So, and he left Los Angeles knowing that his wife was there at another rehab facility and went straight back home.
And when he was in that treatment facility, he refused calls from her. He did not want any phone calls from her whatsoever. So, I mean, that should be stated.
Exactly. And when he escaped, he went straight back home.
Yeah, he goes straight back home. Like I said,
mean, that's the timeline we know.
That's the timeline we know of. But at this point in time, that shit really doesn't matter how he got back to Seattle. It really doesn't. Because
Jesus Christ, Dave could have drove him from, we know.
Yeah, well, what happens on the morning of April 8th is his body is found. It is discovered by, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, Sam, an electrician. So what happens from there on is they do call the cops. Now, the one thing that does bother me about this is in Seattle, all right, this is very few police districts that actually do this, but on a regular death, an unattended death, a patrol officer does respond to the call. There's no requirement for a homicide detective to show up until there is some form of proof of foul play involved. Now, this patrol officer shows up, just a regular beat cop, probably 21, 22, 23 years old, shows up, sees all this heroin, has heard stories about him being suicidal. So the first thing that he says is, oh, he must have committed suicide. So, of course, they call in other detectives. And, of course, Tom Grant is involved in this. Now, Tom Grant shows up, and the first thing that he notices that contradicts the police report is the chair in front of the door. The police report, which, ironically enough, in the original police report, the entire thing, it never says anything about a chair being in front of the door, because what they're saying is that he locked himself in the greenhouse up above this, what was it, the garage? And, well, above the greenhouse, it was a upper-level building, or upper-level room, is that you locked it from the outside. So they're saying that Kurt Cobain goes up there, locks the door from the outside, then locks himself inside, and then puts a stool or a chair in front of the door so that nobody can get in. Now, in the original police report, there's no mention of a stool, but on the very last page of the police report, it is added on. It is said, okay, there was a stool in front of the door that was blocking the entrance. Now, Tom goes on the scene. He notices that it's just a regular push and twist lock. It's not like a deadbolt. You know, there's no master lock on this thing. So when we walk in there, what we see is Kurt Cobain on the ground, lying on his back, and he's got the shotgun inverted across his chest. He's got the barrel held with his left hand up across his chest, and there's one shell ejected to the left side. And it should be noted that the Remington Model 11 does eject from the right side. Now, there's what they call a suicide note there. The suicide note is written out in red ink on the back of an IHOP menu, basically stabbed into a flower pot with a pen, just right there. He has his personal belongings at his feet. He has his wallet with his ID halfway out of the wallet. He also has his drug kit there. Now, in his drug kit, he has, obviously, heroin. He has two syringes with the safety caps back on the needles. Okay? There's no real blood splatter around. There is a small pool of blood by his head. Now, in a lot of reports, you'll read that his face was completely destroyed. And I hate speaking this way about Kurt Cobain, but this is straight facts. They say that his face is pretty much destroyed and he has to be identified with fingerprints. That is not true. The certain shell, which I could not find what it was, did not destroy his face. His head was mostly intact. Well, he had put the shotgun barrel through his mouth. Now, another thing that you need to note is the grip on the barrel of the shotgun. The grip on the barrel of the shotgun was not a tight grip. It was a loose grip. Now, when you die and you're anticipating death, especially in a suicide, you grip it. You grip it tight. And then when the actual impact occurs, your muscles spasm like that. And there's a tight grip on the shotgun. That was one thing that they did notice. Now, going back to the blood splatter, there was a small pool of blood to the back left side on the carpet. Now, assuming, a regular shotgun blast, say to the head, you're going to have a lot of blood splatter. Now, there's two things that could, that we need to bring up is that one is blood pressure. If there's no blood actively pumping through your body, there's nothing that's going to splatter. There's nothing that's going to pump it out. So it is theorized by some people that his blood was not actively pumping when he actually died. So that's part of the things that some of these theories are based off of. Another thing is that he was already possibly laying on the ground when the shotgun blast occurred, and then the shotgun was laid in his hands like that. And a lot of that is from the grip, the blood stain on the floor because of no splatter, and because the ejection of the shotgun shell going to the left side. Now, I will say this. It is not totally out of the realm of possibility to believe that the shotgun shell could hit the right side of his arm and bounce off, some kind of scenario like that. So I really don't take that into too much of consideration. But, another thing that's really odd that investigators noticed that the homicide detectives really didn't care about was the fact that he had shot up 1.52 milligrams of heroin per liter of blood, which is three times the lethal dose. And he literally track marks in each arm. He had fresh needle marks in each arm, and then he rolled his sleeves back down, put the safety caps back on the needles, put the needles back in the drug kit, placed them at his feet, had his wallet out, and then shot himself. To me personally, you got to think of heroin. And I hate to say the fact that I'm friends with friends who do have bad habits. And it's almost impossible because as soon as you shoot up, you hit that euphoric feeling and you don't necessarily lose consciousness, but you hit that point to where you're... Your euphoria, you're done, you're numb. The one thing that I don't get, you know, and I'm going to discount this too, is a lot of the debate is how he could reach the trigger. He was 5'7", 120 pounds. How could he get the barrel in his mouth and still reach the trigger? There have been people who are 5'7", 120 pounds that have done YouTube videos on this just to disprove that theory right there. All right, now that's totally understandable. Yeah. But given the facts of the crime scene, there is some sketchy stuff going on, kind of varying from the official police report to a private investigator. And I guess about, I think it was Richard Lee we had talked about. Apparently he has access to a video that pretty much disproves what the Seattle Police Department stated as fact, according to the body and the blood splatter and, you know, all that good stuff. But at the end of the day, and, you know, this dude, is he hosts a public access show, and I don't want to say he's a conspiracy theorist, but he literally was probably one of the first ones to say Kurt Cobain was fucking murdered. I have this video to prove it. Nobody's seen the video but him. He's never fucking released it, ever. He literally walks around fucking Seattle, like, randomly interviewing people. And, you know, I'm all cool with people being unique and shit and going their own path.
Come on.
But give us something concrete here, man. You know what I mean? Like, let's see the fucking video already. It's been over 20 years, bro. But it still hasn't happened, so, I mean, I wanted to at least bring that up because it is a factor in there that supposedly there is this video, but nobody's ever fucking seen it.
Come on.
Another thing that we have to take into account, like I had said, not so much the position of the body, but the fact the sleeves were rolled down, the fucking syringes had the safety tips put back on them, placed back in the drug kit after shooting up 3 times the lethal dose. Granted, his tolerance was probably next to inhuman. I mean, you know what I mean? Yeah. But the next thing I suppose I was going to bring up is the gun. The gun wasn't dusted for prints until a month after the fact. Now, there were 4 prints pulled off the gun originally, but there was nothing that they could take off of it. It was later dusted again, and there was still nothing. Now, this could be chalked up to it being a new gun. There could be oil on the gun, and the condensation of the greenhouse could affect the fact that there would be no solid prints, all right? So we can put that in there, but we can also, we have to take into consideration the factors there, the oil and the condensation factors for the fingerprints. But there was also no fingerprints pulled anywhere off the pen that he supposedly wrote the suicide note on, and there were no any trace of any kind of fingerprints whatsoever on the actual suicide note itself.
Sadly, well, we don't have
the best part about this is that the autopsy was done and the death certificate signed suicide before the toxicology reports even came back. And you can't see those because the autopsy reports are considered private medical records in the state of Washington, and those are not open to the public. The medical examiner, I'm not going to state his name, but he was a friend of Courtney Love, and he was not actually a Washington State Board certified medical examiner at the time. He was an intern, and he performed the autopsy. What he was he was a 30-year-old student, like I said, intern. He used to promote bands around the Seattle area, and that's how he knew Courtney Love. So the medical examiner at this point in time was not a state board-certified medical examiner, and he was also a friend of Courtney Love. Now, you got to keep in mind, he, within 24 hours, wrote suicide on that death certificate, scribbled it off, and I believe within 8 days the body was cremated. Now, as soon as the body is cremated, the case is pretty much closed because you can't pull the body back out. Another little interesting fact is the head of homicide at that point in time was a gentleman by the name of Cameron. That was his last name. Cameron, not too soon after, and let's just say Cameron was also a known associate of Courtney Love. He was forced to retire not long after this particular incident because he was in a situation where he was involved in doctoring a crime scene. This head of homicide of Seattle Police Department, pretty much what happened was he had a detective on a homicide case. This detective stole, I think it was $11,000 from a crime scene. This Cameron guy didn't report it. He just went back to the crime scene with this detective, replanted the money, and then pretended to rediscover it. And he got found out. He was forced to retire after that incident. And this was not long after Kurt Cobain's death. Now, the head of the Seattle Police Department really didn't have too much to say because he actually passed away a couple years after Kurt Cobain's death. So he really had not too much input. He was the one who forced Cameron to retire. He said, listen, either retire or this is going to get fucking ugly and you're going to make all of us look bad and you're going to lose your pension. You're going to lose this, that, and the other. And Cameron actually ended up being forced into retirement because he doctored a crime scene. And it sucks to say this, but it's hard telling whether or not this was the first and only time that he had ever doctored a crime scene. You know what I mean? And another really cool little fact is they had a pretty renowned medical examiner by the name of Cyril Wecht look over the autopsy and the toxicology reports, and this guy literally was shocked by the way that this was handled, the procedures, and the conclusions. I mean, this guy was pretty world-renowned. He's pretty well-known. And when he found out that, first of all, an intern was handling this autopsy and had signed off on a suicide before the toxicology reports had ever even come back, that alone right there, you know, struck him a chord. He's like, that's just not right. That's a fucking joke. You know, how could you do that? And then let alone the fact that they had the body fucking cremated within 8 fucking days. And like I said, once the body's cremated, the case is pretty much closed. So all those little facts aside, I guess we have to start thinking about what people had to gain or lose by killing Kurt Cobain, or the fact of his life, you know, what that could have played on him committing suicide. And I would love to hear your guys' thoughts on that.
Theories?
So you want our theories? Oh,
well, theory? I mean,
or you want to, there's only off,
there's only so many theories. I mean, Sam, I know you're all about the Illuminati theory. I know that. Okay.
Dance track.
I know.
She won't stop talking about it.
But
I think Casey, in terms of who had things to gain, it would only be Courtney in my mind.
Yeah, definitely. Because here's the deal. Okay. And within the prenup that she had signed, and you got to take this into account too, if they were to get a divorce, she would get half. If Kurt was to commit suicide or die,
she gets everything?
She would get everything.
But to counter that thought, if she wanted Kurt dead, all she had to do was not revive him the 12 times that he overdosed in 12 months.
That's
a simple way. It's not elaborate. You don't need to hire a hitman and blow his head off after shooting him up with heroin in a greenhouse and all this crazy stuff, a personal investigator. You just need to turn around and roll over in bed and not tend to him when he's dying on the floor.
But can I ask you something?
That always bothers me. Yeah.
Can I ask, at those points in time, did she know that Kurt Cobain was going to divorce her?
Oh, fuck it. I knew you were going to ask that. Yeah. Probably not.
Because
she
would want to keep him alive because that's her fucking meal ticket. And don't get me wrong, she was in a band. She literally released a record, I think, the week after he fucking died, which was already set to release. That has no bearing on anything. Her band was half-assed successful. But it is also stated that Kurt Cobain wrote most of those songs in that album. Yeah. And she says that he was never in the studio. He had nothing to do with that album. But you can hear him singing in the background. So, obviously, she was fucking lying about that, too.
So, is those lettering and trying to write the same letters?
Let's touch on the suicide note before we go any further here. Is that wrong, too? Because if you look at the suicide note, they had several different people analyze the suicide note. The first paragraph and the last paragraph are in different handwriting than the actual body of the suicide note.
Yeah, so it seems like majority of the note in the beginning was about him leaving Nirvana and leaving Courtney. And then the tone changes at the end. And then, of course, there's Courtney's little notebook of practicing all of his lettering that she left. That she left at her lawyer's house, Rosemary Carroll. And Rosemary Carroll didn't notice it for a few days. Then flicked it open, was like, oh, fuck. And she immediately rang, Tom Grant, because it does look suspicious. But I also have my own little theory on why it's there.
Okay. I will say this, too. At the end of the suicide note, when you're writing a suicide note, why are you going to sign your full name? Why are you going to say Kurt Cobain? Why not just Kurt? Like, what is that all about? And why would you change your handwriting?
Is it because, did his handwriting change because he was maybe feeling a stronger influence from the drugs that he just did?
Heck yeah. You know, that's a good point. It's a good point. You know, I think Courtney Love had more reason to keep him alive the previous 12 months.
Why does she have the...
Now that she found out that he was going to divorce her, she had more incentive to not save his life or to... Because if that divorce went final, I mean, he had already called Rosemary Carroll, supposedly, and said, I'm getting a divorce, take Courtney out of the will.
Why'd she have letters in her purse?
I read that too.
I don't know. She's got her theory on that. But,
Because you can see in the past, Kurt never took care of himself. Courtney said herself in the Soaked in Bleach documentary that I watched that he can't even catch a fucking taxi on his own. Tracy would pay all the bills. Tracy would sign all the checks. And Courtney most likely had to do the same on his behalf. So maybe she had to practice his writing in order to put his signature on all of these documents because Kurt wouldn't do it himself.
I could see that. Yeah. I could see that. That's plausible. Definitely.
But it is super suspicious still.
It's super.
Why is it there?
Well, and that's what you have to take into consideration is Courtney Love's past and her personality. And, you know, even after Kurt died, her actions. Actions always speak louder than words. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, but if I was married to somebody that I desperately fucking loved and they killed them fucking selves when we just had a child together, I'm pretty fucking sure I would not be shacked up with somebody else 2 months later and hiring that same private detective to follow them around for fucking cheating, you know, for suspected cheating. And the thing is like Tom Grant, and a lot of people throw Tom Grant out the window, but here's the deal. He had a non-biased opinion. He approached this as somebody who didn't know these people. And he was a homicide detective. And a month after Kurt Cobain died, he called Courtney and he told her, he said, listen, your debt is paid in full. You do not owe me any more money because I think somebody might have killed your husband. I don't think 100% that this was suicide. So what she did was she tried to flip the tables and be super sweet with him. And the thing about Courtney Love is she's very assertive. She's very loud. She was dominant. She was obviously the boss in the relationship. She was, you know, a manipulator. And
she showed that.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, all through her, even through her teenage years up until then, I mean, that's just who she was. But when you have a personality like that and somebody says something like that to you, you would think that the first thing they're going to say is, who the fuck did it? Who do you think did it? What the fuck is going on? What information do you have? But she doesn't say that. She gets super sweet on this dude and says, hey, listen, I want to hire you for another job. I need you to follow around my new boyfriend because I think he's cheating on me. I think shit like that is fucking weird, man, because humans are creatures of habit. You know what I mean? Unfortunately, that's how life is. Humans are creatures of habit. And she hasn't been anybody different from, until now. You know, it's like, why would she change her tone like that? Partly because if she hired him for this other job, then that would be a conflict of interest in case she was ever implicated in some kind of murder conspiracy theory. Not a conspiracy theory, but conspiracy is, you know, a plot to kill somebody with, what is it, like two or more people. Yeah. You know, it would be something like that. But I don't know. I think that's just really, really interesting. But I guess, Casey, I really want your thoughts last, if that's okay, because you are the totally non-biased opinion and just heard a bunch of shit. So, yeah. Boone, what are your thoughts?
My thoughts? It's hard. It's really hard. If it's not Courtney or somebody else, or there's no way. I mean, he could have done it by himself with the drugs.
Yeah.
And I think that's the way he wanted to go, and that's the way I think he did want to go. But the shotgun was a kind of insult to me. To me, this whole thing was, I don't want everybody to know that he did this with drugs, so I'm going to shoot him with a fucking shotgun.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think.
I can see that.
I think he did it, but I don't think he did it with a shotgun. He did it with drugs. He did it with his way out. He did it with the way everything felt comfortable. And for once in his life, he felt fucking great.
I could see that.
But somebody put a shotgun in his mouth and he fucking blew his brains out.
All right.
So I don't think he did it.
You don't think he did it?
Not with a shotgun.
Okay.
With That's drugs, fair. Yes, maybe.
That's fair.
But not with a shotgun.
Okay. Sam, how about you?
I think I've hinted at what my
I'm pretty sure is. I know what you're going to fucking say, but I still want to hear you say it, Sam.
All right, so it's straightforward, but I probably won't present it that way. The main theory that is thrown around is Kurt was killed by Courtney Love, but maybe not with her bare hands, but that she had orchestrated for someone to knock him off or make it look like suicide, or even sort of drove him to suicide. But people have said that Courtney killed Kurt because Kurt wanted a divorce, and I can see that. I can see that in his final writings, and it mainly sounded like he wanted to quit Nirvana and end his marriage, and that the final lines can be seen as your usual suicide letter bullshit. So, and the handwriting, of course, is different, and it looks like Courtney may have added that on there. Sure, they found the handwriting practice sheet in her possession that she left behind at her lawyer's house, but like I said before, I think that was there because of her needing to take care of him in every possible way, sign all those checks and pay all those bills. I think the fact that his levels of heroin or morphine in his system was so high can be seen as suspicious. But then again, like we touched on before, he had a $400 a day habit and most likely had built up such a threshold that he would be able to stand that amount. And Courtney immediately planted seeds that Kurt was suicidal as soon as he died. I'm pretty sure she rang her friend, Kurt Loder, the MTV presenter, to tell him Kurt's killed himself. So that was the first person that reported on his suicide, and it was like a ripple effect, and every other media outlet after that, suicide, suicide, suicide. It was on the radio most likely before the police had even ruled it a suicide. I think all of this stuff contributed to their final decision. But, and I know Courtney acted really strange after his death with all the publicity. You know, she, in front of thousands of fans, she would read out his
letter and get them all to yell out and call him an asshole. But even though all of this stuff is highly suspicious, I'm pretty sure Kurt did kill himself. I think it shows in all his past statements and even his music. He was saying at as young as 14, I'm going to be a big musician, shoot myself in the head. And, yeah, after he died, everyone wanted to come out and say they knew the real Kurt. It was like a sick competition to see who knew him best and who was closest to him. But who really knew Kurt Cobain? I don't think anyone really knew him. And he never let the truth get in the way of a good story. As much as he was in the spotlight, he never really revealed his truth to anyone. So, yeah, I think he was an artist. He was a creator. He was a poet. He was too famous. He loved his daughter. He was scared of losing his daughter. He was an addict. He was depressed. And he killed himself like he always said he would, which sucks because I always wonder what other things he could have done and what other amazing songs he could have created for me to connect to. But what he did do was amazing, and I'll never get tired of listening to it.
I respect that.
God bless you.
I respect the shit out of that. That's a good opinion.
That's awesome.
For me personally, obviously, you know, Kurt Cobain did have a troubled childhood. He was severely depressed. He himself said he's moody as fuck. One minute he could be happy, the next minute he could be sad and angry and pissed off at the world. But there are a lot of coincidences and circumstances to consider. Given some of Courtney Love's actions, they are shady as fuck. And given some of the evidence on the scene that is questionable, I gotta say I'm probably 60% towards suicide. And I say 60% because I would love to see an independent, like a federal agency, investigate this. And if they came up with that conclusion after all the details and after they got a chance to look over the police reports, the medical records, the toxicology reports, everything, after they investigated every fucking person involved, if they said it was suicide, then I would believe it. But given the coincidences, you know what? In any case that I've ever covered, you know, one, maybe two coincidences, it can happen. But there are several here that make you question whether or not he actually did it. I mean, no fingerprints on the pen. There was nothing pulled off the piece of paper. No oil from his fingers or anything.
He was holding the fucking top shelf of the fucking semi-automatic shotgun with his left hand.
Yeah, and that's the thing too, you know? I mean, how many people... I'm right-handed. If I was going to do that, I would hold the gun, the barrel, in my left hand. I'm right-handed. I would hit the trigger with my right hand. Kurt Cobain was left-handed. Why was he not holding that gun in his right hand? Why was he not clenching the gun if he knew that was coming? Why was his hands loose? And yeah, there is the theory, you know, the anti-spasm, because he knew it was coming.
Where's recoil?
But there's also recoil, which would make you grip that. So I would have to say I'm a weary 60%. I really want to say 50-50. But given his background, his family history, some of the things he said in his past, that tips it past 50% for me for suicide. But if there, like I said, if there was an independent agency, you know, probably a federal agency, I would prefer, that would look into this and would determine that it was suicide after all the facts and all the coincidences and stripping Courtney down to the bare bones and interrogating the shit out of her for whatever they had to get. If they said it was suicide, I would believe it. But until then, there's too much fucking weird shit going on for me to believe that it was 100% suicide.
I'm with you.
Okay. Now, Casey, I'm so eager to hear what you have to say. I'm like dying for this right now.
All right. So I have to say, you really have brought some things to the table that my unbiased, no knowledge opinion of Kurt has, I have to admit, kind of swayed a little in terms of this investigation and the theory of his death. It really has. However, I really do think you can't, there are so many things that you've brought up that we go, oh my God, that's so plausible. He's totally been murdered. And then on the other hand, it's, well, how the fuck do you know? How do you know for sure? There's no certainty in any of it. And until there's certainty, like you just said, Justin, I can't sit on the side of murder. I can't. I went into this thinking this was a suicide, and I was really certain that it had to be a suicide. Look at his past. Look at his drug use. Look at his mental health issues. Look at the things he says and his songs and his writings and his this. But the things that you've just said have swayed me slightly. But I have to say, I'm still on the grounds of suicide. I do think that this is, yeah, Illuminati confirmed. I do think that this is an incredibly sad case of a sensitive, deep-feeling man who found life hard to bear at times through his entire life. This time, whatever the trigger was, whatever was happening, whatever outside forces, internal forces, it was just too much, and he did take his own life. Earlier off air, we were kind of talking about my American friends who I drink PBR with. Well, in the past I did. But one of them, there's a part of me that Kurt kind of, that my friend reminds me kind of of Kurt on one side, because this friend of mine 2 years ago took his own life. He struggled with drugs and mental health issues, and he just felt that he wasn't enough for this world. And there's a part of me that feels that that's kind of what Kurt struggled with. He wasn't enough for everyone. Everyone wanted more and more and more and more, and he couldn't give that to them. And so for me, on one side, that's a connection I have. And on the other, I see just a tortured artist along the lines of Jim Morrison and all of them who found it difficult to battle the sides of fame with wanting to produce something artistic and creative and put it out to the world. For me, all of the Courtney stuff, you know, whether you think she was killed by, that she killed him, she had a hand in pushing him to take his own life, or whichever story you think of, I think they are just stories. Maybe they were a way for fans to rationalize and justify the loss of the legend that was Kurt. Maybe there was something more sinister. They were trying to take her down because, as we've all just kind of spoken about, she wasn't the most liked person, not just by those close to Kurt, but by a lot of people in the celebrity world and outside of that. And potentially she could have been taken down by these rumors and the things that people were saying. However, Samantha dragged me along to the movies a few years ago to see Montage of Heck. And yeah, well, she did. She dragged me along kicking and screaming, but I have to thank her for it, because writing up this death theory, I just thought back to the scenes that we were watching from those personal movies. And to me, I saw genuine love between those two, whether it was completely substance induced, or there was just this unspoken, can't explain it connection between them. I just can't sit with the fact that she killed him because of the things that I saw on that film, and it was so raw and so intense. So to me, I just really do think it's suicide. How much?
Don't give her the friend pat on the back for agreeing with you. What the fuck is that?
No, she's not.
Agree with yourself.
God,
agree with yourself.
I'm being supportive.
Okay. No, and I respect that.
I'm not sitting here agreeing with her. I tell ya, like I said, props to you. You opened my mind to so many things, and that's why I can't say I'm 100% suicide. That's what he did, but I'm probably more than 60%.
Okay.
Like,
that's
I'm
fair.
Probably more of that 85%.
Okay. That's fair. That's fair enough.
She was 100% suicide.
suicide before we started this recording. You know what? So you've done a pretty good job.
And that's, in all honesty, like, that's part of the joy that I get out of this is, like, I don't care whether you agree with my theory or whether, you know, it's right or wrong. That doesn't bother me. My job here, for me personally as a podcaster, is to make you think. And if I can,
you've done that, I can tell you.
If I can present enough facts to make you think or open your mind to an alternative theory or possibility, then I've done my job. She's like mind blown.
Yes, there were actually moments you were talking and I'm just like, you've just said something that's completely shattered a conception I had of.
So I got to ask this question again. I asked before we started recording, how did you ladies enjoy an investigative research episode? Did you find it enjoyable? Did it give you headaches? Did you want to fucking kick my ass?
Yeah. No, there were times that, no, I'm not going to lie. There were times I did want to kick your ass. You put me onto these different links and different things to look at. And then you click one thing and you're like, fuck. And then you click another thing and you're just going down this rabbit hole. Before I knew it, I've been on this every day since we talked about setting up this recording. And last night I didn't get to sleep till 2:30 in
and
the
you,
morning.
You know what,
I'm
though?
Just sitting there, what? Still digging.
Yeah. And you know what, though? Me and you had probably a great conversation last night, like, about this case and about in general, and I was like, you know what, I'm glad that I got to know you better and I got to know Casey better because of this, because you ladies are for real and you're awesome, and I'm honestly, like, overjoyed that you guys decided to participate in this, and I knew Sam would be down. I knew she would, but
oh yeah, jumped.
You guys know what time it is, dear? It's like a fucking quarter till four.
I'm gonna say like four.
He's over here. Yeah, he's over here crying. Yeah. He's fucking drunk. Whatever.
I'm not drunk.
But but I will say this before we keep going: we are gonna we are gonna do a little fun thing here. But after the fun thing, the end of this episode is gonna be very special. There's going to be a couple audio clips, so don't leave just yet. But our little fun thing here is I asked everybody to pick two favorite Nirvana songs. Casey obviously being the awesome exception because she is not a Nirvana fan, so this should get interesting. And I also asked everybody to pick a quote, and I wanted everybody involved in this because this is Kurt Cobain was a hero for me, and not because he was a heroin addict or a pretty much the definition of a fucking Shakespearean tragedy, but because he was the voice for the people who were never heard. That's why he is one of my fucking heroes. He said he had the platform and he took it full throttle. And he screamed out what everybody else wanted to say, but never could.
And everybody listening, if you, write down these song lyrics and these quotes, whatever.
Take them to heart.
Listen to them.
But I guess first, Boone, what? Sam, you want to go first?
These songs.
Oh, my God. She's like, what?
Sorry.
What?
No, she's entranced in her actual stuff she has written down that she's just, like, focused.
All right. I actually have to read my notes in this portion because there's so many songs I love. I forgot the ones that I
That was the best
it was
part.
Really, really hard.
That was the best part. We talked about this before we started because I told Sam, I was like, okay, we're going to choose two songs and a favorite quote. And you're like, two fucking songs? Are you fucking kidding me? How am I going to choose two songs?
Then, I said that too.
Yeah, and then I told
on the other end of that.
Yeah, and I told Boone the same thing, and I was like, "Hey, we got to choose two songs," and he's like, "How the fuck am I going to choose two songs, man? That's fucking impossible." And I'm like, "That's the same thing."
That's kind of dumb, man. Yeah, it's hard.
I said, "At least it's not one song." I mean, come on.
That would have just been a no.
That's a big no.
That would have been easy for me.
So I'll start with my first one. I went with the fun one that I listen to get pumped up. I love Scentless Apprentice. And like in the audio clips that you played to us previously, you know, that song's written about that book. So I just love the heavy grunge sound and the speed that Dave Grohl is working at through it. It's, yeah, I just love it.
Well, I'll tell you a secret. When you told me that was one of your picks, I kind of slipped that audio clip in there for you. So.
Yeah. I got. Did you see my face when it was playing?
She's like,
yeah.
I'm looking at Casey. I'm nudging. I'm like, that's like my
thought. She got excited there.
She said those exact words.
Yes.
That is what that song is based on.
Yeah, it's awesome. Ooh. My number two pick, which is actually my number one pick, but I don't know why I read it as my second pick. But anyway, it would be Something in the Way, because I've always loved this song, and it has a cool story behind the recording too, which is one of the reasons I really love it. Apparently, they tried over and over to record this track, and it just didn't sound right, and everyone was getting frustrated. And in the end, Kurt just said, that's because it needs to be played this way. And he laid down on his back and just started playing his guitar and singing while he was lying on his back. And they all had to rush to get microphones around him to capture it. Yeah, when I listen to the song, I can just picture that. And he was just a freaking awesome. Like the sound of his voice in this.
Oh, yeah, we love it too.
It's amazing.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, and the meaning it has to me is what makes me love it even more, because a lot of Kurt's songs can be seen as having a double meaning, but the way I interpret this song is when he speaks about being under the bridge, obviously relating to that time that he quote-unquote lived under the bridge. Yeah, for him to say in there, like one of the lyrics says, it's okay to eat fish because they don't have any feelings. It's like he is the fish because he is a Pisces after all. But to me, it's like he's saying, it's okay to eat me. Like, it's okay to destroy me because I don't have any feelings. I'm numb to it, or I'm not even worthy of feeling. And Something in the Way, like, I know I've been in this situation myself at one point in my life without going into too much detail, but it eats at your self-worth. And when I hear him repeating that over and over, I feel connected to it because it's like he's saying that he is that something in the way, like he's blaming himself, and I understand that. And it's just so raw and so emotional. And yeah, it takes me back to that time I was underneath my metaphorical bridge. So that's probably why that's my favorite song.
Great choices. Great choices.
It's awesome.
All right.
I'm to hear yours.
All right. Your favorite songs, Boone? What you got?
Both of them?
Yeah, both of them.
Well, first, I'm going to go with Polly.
Good tune. Good tune.
This song was about a girl that left a rock concert, got picked up by a guy, and was raped and tortured and this and that and the other. And she made a scene after one of his friends picked her up and took her to a gas station. And long story short, she was rescued. And Kurt Cobain said, you know what? I'm going to write a song about that.
What about your other one?
My other one? It's kind of personal.
Yeah.
Penny Royalty. I always liked this song. I didn't know why till a few months ago. I started listening to it real hard again. You know, they say drink Pennyroyal tea, you know, and it makes you feel better inside and this and that and the other. And honestly, it doesn't. It makes you feel like shit.
I love you, bro, but you're slurring.
Right. I am slurring. This pain right there is what I always pictured.
All right, Casey. You're next. I'll go last. I can't fucking wait to hear yours.
What does it mean?
Okay. So, I feel that there's an expectation on me.
No.
I just heard it's really funny,
so I gotta fucking know it.
No, what I mean is I feel like there's an expectation on me as a non-fan, to pick Smells Like Teen Spirit, because that's, you know, that's what a non-fan would know. That's
pretty much
the songs,
yeah.
That Come As You Are, you know, they're the songs that you'd know. I'm going to have to disappoint you because neither of my songs Smells Like Teen Spirit, which it always makes me laugh because I like Weird Al Yankovic and the Smells Like Nirvana. Oh my God. Anyway.
What's your favorite?
I guess I'm the other one who likes. I like parody songs. They're really funny. Right. Clever. Okay. Enough of that rubbish. So, my first, and really this is my ultimate favorite song, is one that I affectionately call In the pants, in the pants.
Yes.
That's what I call it. Samantha dared me to sing it crazy, so I thought I would.
Do you know the real title of it now?
I now know the real title. Okay. So I was telling Samantha this the other day, and she pissed herself laughing at me. She's like, you're an idiot. She's like, this is what it's called. Okay. And I now know what it's called. But baby brain and the fact that I just simply forget the title played a factor in this. But Where Did You Sleep Last Night? Okay. Great is tune. My ultimate favorite song.
Great tune. Unfortunately,
I love it. I know. It's-
I really wanted to hate your tune, but I love it.
Sorry. So when I was talking to Samantha, she asked me, you know, why do I like it? And I was thinking about that. And then yesterday I listened to the song again to try and pinpoint the reason. And I came up with two reasons. And the first one, I think, is simply for the actual melody. I love songs that can capture me just based on the interesting sounds that the instruments can make and what just the music can do to me. Like, some of my favorite songs don't have words at all. So that would have to be my first reason. But the second one would have to be the key change that happens in the MTV.
Oh, yeah, the MTV Unplugged.
Yeah, the MTV.
Is what she's referring to.
Oh,
that
particular.
Yeah. About 3 minutes in, the changes from a soft, almost whisper to a raw, intense, slightly angry scream singing. And here I totally zone out and it is like the best thing I've ever heard. But also I feel like I'm intruding on his personal feelings and thoughts and a moment that I shouldn't be a part of. And Sam said to me that, okay, it's not an original Nirvana song.
No, it's by Lead Belly.
Yeah, yeah. So
we love them. It was released in like, what, the 30s or 40s? And I think he actually was offered, or he bought the guitar for like $50,000. I'm pretty sure he mentions it before he performs the song.
He does,
yeah.
He asked David Geffen to buy it for him. He asked David Geffen to buy it for him, and he's like, no, he said he wouldn't do it. He wouldn't do it. So I tell you what, Casey.
My favorite song is there.
I tell you what, Casey. Check my personal Instagram in a few days, and I will fucking play that song for you.
Oh, I just love it. It is
good. I will play
I get
that
shivers
song for you.
When he says shivers, like the long pause.
Oh, my God.
And
he
says shivers, it actually gives me goosebumps.
And he drags that note out for so long, and then there's just this brutal sound in his voice.
Yeah.
I'm getting it.
It's about,
oh, I know.
The song's about like a woman cheating.
I'm sorry, but I you know what? It's not even an original Nirvana song, but God damn it, Kurt owned that shit.
Yes.
Like, I get chills when I fucking hear it, and that was a great
You know, the only reason why I picked the songs I did, because I couldn't, I was like, you know what? I cannot pick cover songs.
If I would have picked a
cover, I wanted to. I wanted to.
I didn't know until this morning, and I'd already written it up, and I'd already. But it's my favorite, no matter what. What can you do?
Oh, this one I love.
Okay, my second one. I guess like Samantha had a pump up happy one and one that really meant something to her. Okay, I would say that. Where Did You Sleep Last Night? I have this, I don't know, strong connection to, not because of any old reason other than the fact that it's insanely good. My second one is probably a little bit funny-er, I guess, but it's going to have to be. And she loves the reason.
I'm like twitching.
My second favorite song is probably Heart Shaped Box.
Oh, good tune. Good tune.
Thank you. And a long time ago, when I wasn't 30 years old, somebody told me – it was a long time ago – somebody told me that the song was actually about Courtney Love's vagina. And I remember thinking, shit, that's so funny. Like, I love that. It's a song about a vagina. I love it. But as I got older and I listened to the song again, I could actually feel that the song was what I consider his kind of love song. So,
don't stop her.
Yes, at times I still think it's about her vagina because I'm never going to let that go. But now I hear it at a deeper level. I consider the connection and the passion that they had, and they had it right from the beginning. We spoke about it earlier. And also the intensity of that connection. I feel that love is different to and for everyone. And I think here is the expression of their emotions and the physical love that they shared. But that's just my interpretation. At the end of the day, I still kind of think it's about her vagina as well.
It's, yeah, maybe. Good
tune. No. You can make me cry. Maybe.
Made me laugh.
No, that's yeah, great, though. It's awesome.
I just thought it was great.
You made me cry. Well, I mean, it's cool. You know, Casey chose a song because she thought it was about Courtney Love's vagina. That's cool, man.
Yes. You know? Yeah, I know. That's why I really love your choice. But then again, there's one lyric in there that says, the meat-eating orchid? Yeah. That could be a new... what was the other one? Like a whisker biscuit?
Yeah. Whisker biscuit, yes! Yes!
Just tie that one yes. back in there. A meat-eating orchid. Oh, man. It's all, yeah.
Okay, we'll see. I needed to bring some lightheartedness, I guess. So my vagina song is... Here we go.
Your vagina song.
Oh, Courtney's.
Yeah.
The JJ. I don't know.
It's a whisker biscuit. We've established this.
I'm going to use that. Justin, I'm taking that term.
Dude, I'm telling you, man. Really, that's all Kurt right there. Just credit him with that and we'll be good.
I will. I'll just have a little copyright there, Kurt Cobain.
For me personally, I went the route of choosing a harder song and then a softer song. And I will say this, honorable mention-wise, Omi off their Unplugged album. And it's not their song, but it's fucking amazing. Just fucking amazing. But I'm not even going to go forward with the description because that's just honorable mention. But for me personally, probably the first one would be Territorial Pissings. Because when you hear the intro of that fucking song, it is almost impossible not to drive 150 fucking miles an hour down the road doing Grand Theft Auto shit, okay? Like, ramming into fucking cars and, like, beating the shit out of people, okay? Like,
love it.
I
can
attest to that. But the best, driving part. But the best part about it is the lyrics. I mean, when I was an alien, cultures weren't opinions, you know? Man. You know? I've never met a wise man. If so, it's a woman. And people never consider the lyrics. Like, my dad heard that song for the first time. He's like, I don't even know he's screaming. It's like, listen to the words. And it's so great because you read somebody the lyrics just without the music. And they're like, God damn, man, that's fucking amazing. But then you play in the song and it's like, Jesus, what is that? And I think that's one of those things that Kurt Cobain had that he could do. Like, he would put meaningful lyrics into a fast fucking punk song. And that right there, like, that song will get my heart racing. But the lyrics actually are meaningful because whether a lot of people like to admit it or not, Kurt Cobain was a fucking vocalist for feminism before it was considered politically correct or even cool to fucking do.
Damn.
That fucking guy spoke out for women more than anybody in the 90s that I personally can think of just off the top of my head. Granted, there probably was some politicians that said shit.
Yeah, fuck them.
But this dude, seriously, like, had a voice and he was so in tune with his feminine side that people don't give him credit for that. And he saw the world in a different perspective. And, you know, one of my quotes is going to refer to that. Because it's my podcast and I have two quotes, not one. Yeah, so damn right. That's how it's going to go. But not to pull the, you know, dictatorship card here, but that's what's going to happen. But the other one, I hate to be cliche about it, but I got to say all apologies, man. I mean, that fucking song right there is just... It sends shivers down my spine every time I hear it, still to this day. And I remember the first time I heard it, and it doesn't matter how many times it comes on the radio or how many times I play it or anything like that. It just, personally, to me, you know, I can't speak for him. Kurt got to that point in his career where literally he was being criticized for fucking everything he did and everything he said. And he was being looked at as a shitty person or whatever else anybody wanted to say about him because of who he was. And I think he plainly says it. What else should I be? All apologies. That to me is just, I mean, it's pretty simple. And granted, you know, there's
obviously a lot more to the song. It's deep and the lyrics fucking always hit home, and it's a fucking amazing song. But now on the serious note, quotes wise, I did post a bunch of quotes, and I didn't want to tag you in them, Casey, but I was like, I'm kind of going to put these quotes out there, and maybe Casey will look through them and kind of check them out, because Kurt was a very...
Yeah, I should just bring your Instagram up.
Kurt was a very intelligent individual, you know, and he had a lot of good quotes, so I would love to hear what your... Actually, let's go with Boone's first, because Boone's is a fucking great one. We were talking about this at the bar earlier. This is fucking great.
So,
I'm going to go ahead and read that for you. Yeah. It's in a 1992 interview.
Yeah, well, I said the same thing I did.
I said it clearer. When asked if he would ever wear a tie-dye t-shirt, Kurt Cobain says, I would only wear a tie-dyed t-shirt if it were dyed with the urine of Phil Collins and the blood of Jerry Garcia.
Boom.
Now, why do you fucking love this quote so much?
Honestly, it's because it's my dude.
It's Kurt Cobain, man.
Kurt Cobain, man.
It's Kurt Cobain. All right, how about you ladies over there?
All right, I'll go first. Actually, mine kind of relates to stuff that you were saying just before in your all apologies chat. I don't want it to seem cliche, but the one I picked is I'd rather be hated for who I am than loved for who I am not. And I feel like I connect with that, feeling like at times in life, in my own life or my own family, that I've been, I guess, the black sheep of the family for choices I've made or things that I've done. At the end of the day, I have to sit back and go, I am who I am because of everything I've done on my own. And if you don't like that, well, I'm not going to pretend to be someone that you wish that I was. Then you don't need to be in my life. And this is where I kind of feel like that for me is, that's just my connection.
Mine totally ties in with that. Saying wanting to be someone else is a waste of the person you are. I feel like it's the same.
Yep.
Yeah. I have the same. Casey and I have had a similar experience in our youth.
Yep.
We went through it together.
We sure did.
So, yeah, that's my fave and that's my fave. Wanting to be someone else is a waste of the person you are. It's just like reinforcing that you are enough.
Yep. It's taken a while to get to this, like for us to think that like, not
just read Kurt quotes every fucking day. He's like the best self-help tool.
He is.
His music and read his quotes all the time and you'll be fine.
There you go.
Very well stated. Those two are two of my favorites as well, because for the same reasons that you ladies just said right there. I mean, if you don't love yourself, how can you even love anybody else? You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
They think they need other people to make them happy all the fucking time, and that's not the case. You gotta love yourself before anybody else. And if people don't love you for who you are, fuck them. But,
damn straight.
My first one is, and a lot of people find this funny, but I think there's a meaning to it. And he once said, I used to think when I was young that it was from a different planet. Every night I would talk to my real family in the skies. I knew there were thousands of other alien babies dropped off all over the place, and I have only met a few of them. It's really fun to pretend that, you know, that they're in some special reason for me, and why I feel so homesick all the time, and so do the other aliens. And I only have a chance to come across a handful of these aliens the rest of my life. And eventually, one day, we'll find out what we're supposed to do. And obviously, when people hear that, they hear aliens and they're like, oh, that's funny. And it's like, you know what? That's not what it's about. Kurt Cobain knew he was different. I think deep down, he knew that he had a special purpose. He didn't know exactly what he was supposed to do, but he knew he was different because he didn't think like other people. You know what I mean? I don't know. I just think it's a really cool quote. And the other one of mine would probably have to be very careful if you make a woman cry, because God counts her tears. Every tear a woman sheds is equivalent to man's sacrifices in life. The woman came from a man's rib, not on his feet to be stepped on, not on his head to be superior, but on his side to be equal, under his arms to be protected, and near his heart to be loved. And I think that right there literally says, I don't even need to explain that. That is probably one of the most beautiful quotes I've ever fucking heard.
Awesome. Yeah.
And that speaks volumes of Kurt Cobain's character and what he was about in his life. He was about equality and everybody being cool and equal and
love.
And love, man.
Yeah, my eyes are watering, but I'm not crying.
What, you've got us over here is a little bit. I heard that quote.
That was such a romantic one.
It was, and that's the thing, though, man. Like, at the end of this episode, you'll hear another quote from him. I played it for you ladies earlier. The listeners will get to hear it after, we wrap up here. But I think that's, love. That's what it's all about, equality and love and
everybody being on the same. I love you guys. We all love each other, so.
We do.
But I suppose with that being said, ladies, did you have a good time?
Yeah,
absolutely.
This is way cooler than what we expected it to be. Man. Casey's been looking over at me and mouthing the whole time, like,
this is really awesome. Yeah, no, it's been great.
Good. I'm glad you guys.
And here I was, the one that needed convincing the most.
You held your own. You did great.
Well, I mean, convincing to come on because I thought I'd be useless. Yeah.
But no, it was funny because Casey was really. You were kind of hesitant. You're like, oh, I won't have anything to contribute. I'm like, fuck that. Like, teamwork, dude. You two need to come on together and do this. And I knew Sam was down from, like, literally about 55 seconds after I fucking messaged her on Instagram saying something about it. Fuck yeah, let's do this. I'm like, all right.
Fucking absolutely. She told me as soon as you asked her.
But I appreciate you ladies doing this, and I really hope you had a good time. And I'm sorry if my... sending you links and investigative type podcast gave you some headaches.
You can do that all the time, you know. I love the rabbit holes. But last night, yeah, I just got real deep into it.
Yeah. Hey, yeah.
You know, the more links you send us, the more times we can come back on here. So just send us links. Send us all the links.
Well,
things.
Yeah, I'll just be honest with you. I've already cooked up some ideas for a future episode if you ladies want involved, so...
We just need to confer.
I think we'll find that.
Okay. And I tell you what, it'll be a more low profile case, so it'll, it won't be a fucking goddamn rock legend or anything like that. But it'll, like I said, anything will always be unsolved. Maybe it'll be paranormal. Maybe it'll be unsolved murder. We don't know. But I've always I never tell anybody my next move. I always got some shit up my sleeve, so it'll be a good time.
Always. We're really, really, really grateful that you asked. I know, obviously, we've said 1,000 times Samantha was, but I'm so glad that I came on. I've learned so much about Kurt. I have a greater appreciation for him now than I did before, and that's even with all the amazing stuff Samantha tells me. But I just, as a non-fan, not as big a fan as everyone else, I hope that for everyone else who listens to this episode, that they go away thinking some new things like I am, because my mind's blown.
Okay, good. That's all I hope for. That's all I hope for. If I can make people think a little bit more, then I've done my job. So yeah. I'm glad that...
You meant a lot to a lot of people, and we really appreciate you letting us work with you on this one. We know it's probably the biggest episode and case that we're ever going to cover. Kurt Cobain is a legend.
Maybe lengthwise, but
we're really grateful.
I am grateful that you ladies decided to join me, and I'm glad that you had too. Fun. And
thanks for having us.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
You guys are awesome.
I am grateful that you ladies decided to come on. Thank you very much for joining me on this episode. I appreciate it.
You guys rock.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
You're pretty bright, and your lyrics are pretty angry, angst-ridden, frustrated. You see the world for what it is. did you ever have second thoughts about bringing a child into the world?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, I really was a lot more negative and angry and everything else a few years ago, but the world seems a lot better for some reason, you know. I mean, 4 years ago, I would have said, the classic thing, like, how dare someone bring a child into this life, you know, it's just completely a terrible way to go, and, you know, the world's going to explode any day and stuff like that, but once you fall in love, it's a bit different.
After Kurt died, I didn't know what I was going to do. I spent a lot of time doing nothing. No radio, no TV. Nothing. I just couldn't stand the sound of music. I was scared of music. I remember being in Ireland, driving around the country, away from everything. Totally disconnected from the rest of the world. And I drove past this kid who was hitchhiking. And he had a fucking Kurt Cobain shirt on. I saw that and I thought, I gotta do something quick. And then I realized that music was the one thing that was gonna help me out of that place.
He'd be so proud. He'd say he wasn't, but he would be. I just miss him so much. He was such an angel.